You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
New Pope, who dis? Welcome to the officially unofficial podcast for The New Pope on HBO. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And I'm Cecily.
And we're talking about season one, episode one of The New Pope, not to be confused with The Young Pope, which HBO definitely doesn't want you to think is part of this series. I don't understand it.
Oh, there was a first season for this?
Yeah. Oh, you haven't. Oh, no. Ooh. This conversation is going to be weird if you haven't seen that.
It is weird how they are completely separate in the archives. Like, and on this, on the front page, I don't know if it's still like this, but on Sunday, Monday night, they were both on my like recommended thing. So I just went to The Young Pope and thought, well, I'll just navigate to season two. You can't get there. Can't get there. No
They're
relation.
They're not connected at all?
Not connected
at all.
Even
in the brand?
It would not surprise me if they fix that, because that seems like what I imagine is, this stuff is it has to be like auto generated based on like the title. So if it's got the same title, it just goes under, and this has got a different title. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing that makes sense. But yeah,
but they're also calling it season one, episode one on HBO's website. Yeah.
And
right.
They called this episode first episode.
Yeah. That's true. That's true. So I don't know. In their minds, it's a separate series.
Yeah. I kind of respect it, because, you know, it's been so long since the first season that maybe you want to capture new viewers, but all of the like marketing that came out before this is definitely targeted towards people who are familiar with Lenny as the Pope.
Oh, sure.
We're considering it the same show. Mm-hmm. If you noticed in your feed, all of the Young Pope episodes are there, because we covered all of that.
Yep.
4 years ago. It's been a while.
It's been a while. When I looked at my notes, it was February, I think, 17th, 2017, when we put this thing to bed. But yeah, it's the same. It's created by Paolo Sorrentino. Mm-hmm. It's got all the same crew coming back.
Yep.
I guess that was one of the things I was most nervous about, is 4 years later, would they have something interesting to do or say about this thing? Would it still be fun to watch? Would it start taking itself too seriously? The receipts are in. What'd you guys think?
Taking itself too seriously? Definitely not.
Yeah.
Like, no. It does the opposite of that.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Like, I was immediately soothed, like, within 5 minutes of watching this episode. Five minutes in this episode, like, the heaving mass, writhing mass of nunnery in the introduction. Mm-hmm. The bird shitting on Viello's shoulder as he's making his pitch to be the next pope.
Yeah, like, I didn't even need 5 minutes in. I just needed three fingers in, I guess.
Yeah.
I immediately remembered all the things I missed about the show, because there's nothing like it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just really visually isn't. Incredibly striking. The story they're telling seems like it shouldn't work, but it does.
And they're willing to go anywhere with this. Like, I was watching that scene with the nun sponge bathing the young pope, and I'm like, well, this is that actress's best day of her life, A.
Uh-huh.
But B, surely they won't take this where I would take this in my fucked up, dirty brain.
Mm-hmm.
And then they do.
Yeah.
And I like, that's some special kind of sin, right? There's a hell for that.
I was just thinking that, like, the confidence of which he's playing with these very culturally important, significant toys, you know, there's a complete lack.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's weird, because it's reverent and it's irreverent. Like, it takes 2.5 minutes to file in cardinals into this college and shows everything in loving, lush detail.
That scene is amazing.
Mm-hmm. All the gravity and all the weight. And then when the Cardinals flushes the toilet from off scene, comes into the like, arranges his underwear underneath his dress. And it's like, oh, right. And that's,
yeah, it's this image of what you think of the Catholic Church and the realities of it sort of juxtaposed in strange ways that I've never seen before. That is really what this series does so well.
Yeah. I remember, because I was reading this book on, you know, like, I don't know, like master slave relationships, and because some of people claim to be in these like 24/7 BDSM relationships where someone's always bound or whatever. Mm-hmm. And this one thing I was writing, it's like, you have to remember that even in these situations, sometimes it's just about passing the salt at the dinner table, right?
Yeah,
like, to be. And that's what, like, beings. Even though these guys are all like the brothers of Christ and the brides of Christ, sometimes it's just about passing the salt. Sometimes it's just about, hey, your underwear is riding up underneath this this frock. And I like those moments where you see that these guys are just men, but they also pay, I think, more than just lip service to the spiritual side. Like, I thought it was interesting hearing the inner thoughts of the cardinals, like the what types of popes they're praying for, and they're all over the map.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I was more sympathetic to some than others, but like, it was really you know, I felt like it took that stuff seriously. And that's why the show works, because it is very human. Mm-hmm. And how can you hate on anything? You know, like, you know, how can you hate on anything that's human?
Yeah, it's presented with such a flair that you can feel a little bit lost in the show sometimes. Yeah. I definitely do. I went back and I was desperately trying to figure out, what are they getting at with the mole on Voyella's face, but not on Hernandez? And I came away from it going, I'm not quite sure, but I don't think that matters.
Like, I think it might just be a gag.
It might just be a gag. I mean, them looking alike seems to me like they could be doing some devil and angel thing, but they're both teamed up as the devil at the end. And I don't understand it, but it works on some level.
Yeah, the only thing they can agree on is that they're both so very different.
Right.
Yes.
which isn't even the truth.
Which is obviously on the face of it, on the literal face of it, untrue. Like,
yeah, and I've seen, like, I remember... in one of the Ocean's 11, they do this gag where they have Julia Roberts as a member of the gang, but they use her supposed resemblance to Julia Roberts to, like, get access to a museum or something. And it's kind of like one of those things like, wow, that's audacious. And I'm not sure it actually worked. But here it's like, by the time I realized what they were doing, Hernandez was already in the bathroom saying, what's that shit on your face? Like, and I'm like, oh my God, they don't even care. They got a mole on one guy, different glasses on the other, and this is two separate characters. Everyone's going to make the joke, and I loved it. I thought it was great. I don't know how this show gets away with this. That's the thing. It's like, people that, I mean, there's a couple shows when people, most of the shows that we cover, people ask, hey, do you think I'd like it? Absolutely. Like, it's like Game of Thrones, rough at the end, but most people, if they can make it through the first couple episodes, are going to love it. The Wire, it's like same thing. You get through the first four episodes, Expanse. And like Breaking Bad is like, yeah, you're probably in from the pilot. And Leftovers, I'm like, that's an acquired taste. Mm-hmm. This is, I don't even know. I don't know why I like it, because so many of these things, like the reverence and the profane and the juxtaposition of tone, are kind of like my personal bugaboos. But if you do it stylishly, and the panache that this show has to pull this shit off is just off the charts.
Right. Yeah. To be just as it's just out there as it is, but also have this really complicated political thing that's going on, and it really tracks too. Like the 34 rounds of voting, someone did the math and they figured out how to make this work. And they have some complicated mechanics on their Voyello side on how he manipulates all of that.
Yeah, which I will say I didn't understand. I don't think this episode did a good job of conveying what was happening in those scenes.
Damn.
I couldn't tell you if that went over 35 days. And maybe this is just my general unfamiliarity with the Catholic procedures. And maybe if I'd watched more things with, because I know I've seen a conclave before in shows. I've watched, I can't remember what it was called. There was another HBO show, which was all about, it was like Medici or something like that.
Yeah.
I watched that whole show.
Jeremy Irons. It was.
Not Jeremy Irons, like Ironsides, maybe. It was.
Oh, really? Okay.
I don't think it was. Maybe it was Jeremy Irons. Yeah. But I watched that whole show. And so I know generally that this is a procedure where there are a lot of breaks, but they don't make it clear that the breaks are happening and that people are talking and trying to convince each other.
Yes,
and like
there's papal politics.
And I think this happens over a month, like 35 days.
Yeah.
They do each meet day, each day.
They make the smoke come out, and if it's black smoke, there's no Pope. If there's white smoke, they got
but
Pope.
I'm only vaguely familiar with that stuff, and so they didn't convey any of that in this episode. Well, see, they expected me to know that.
I'm bummed because I was about to come out saying, like, I don't think you have to be an expert in these papal procedures because, provide, like, a play-by-play. And sometimes when it's a little bit too expository, like, Viola, like, I know this. What the? Like, why are you saying, you know, why are you explaining to this? I get it. Like, know. So you understand, like the push and pull, but even then it's like, you know, we talked about the 2.5 minutes of these cardinals filing in. So many things are indulgent about this process, like the reading of the counts, and
even them turning in their votes. They have to put it on top of the plate, and they have to do a prayer, and then they use the plate to tip it into the
And I liked how, and they also, the other brilliant thing I thought is they used all the different like frescoes and paintings, like the expressions on the painting's face
as reaction shots.
Yeah, as reaction shots, because Viola is just completely blank throughout this process, but they've got the, you know, whatever, these background figures going on.
And then you've got a truly gorgeous song playing in the background.
Yes.
Like that scene is my absolute favorite of the entire episode, where they're filing into the Sistine Chapel for the conclave, and it just it languishes in that, and not in a bad way for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do we want to talk? I want to talk about Lenny, because that's the big question I had. Like, how are they going to keep him sidelined? How are they going to have this new Pope? And then, like, you know, what the season's going to be, who knows? But, like, Lenny's been in a coma for 9 months. Mm-hmm. They've attempted 3 heart transplants on him.
None of them have taken.
I think they've all failed because they're Muslim hearts and going into a Catholic body, and it just won't happen.
Yeah, yeah.
God's forbidding it.
The Muslim and Catholic antibodies just don't match up.
Like, I constantly question in this show how much of God's influence is being exerted here. Because, like, when Viola gives that speech about how I want to be Pope, and God sends a dove to shit on him, and then he sends a bird to steal the speech that he's given to Francis II.
I assume it's the same bird.
It might be the
Lenny like doing some sort of astral projection like he does in his third heart transplant.
No,
I can't rule it out.
There is a realism to the spirituality here. Like there are miracle, like, you know, they're kind of like maybe the leftovers type of miracles, but they are in this universe miracles. Like, it wouldn't surprise me at the end of the season, like, Lenny gets up with, like, some kind of flaming fucking heart, you know, and just turns into a seraphim right there and starts smoting.
There's a miraculous birth in the first season.
Absolutely.
Pope.
Absolutely.
So I really don't know.
And he heals people. Like, there's a lot of these kind of miraculous things happen. So, the fact that he's sitting here, and it seems like this is setting up several difficulties with the church. Number one, that a lot of faithful seems like they were really taken with Pope Pius the 13th. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they blame the church's corruption for the Pope's lack of heart rather than God. It seems like there's an extremist Muslim element out there that's like wanting to go to war against Christians. They also have this new Pope, Francis II, who has an army of sparrows right out of Game of Thrones. You might be able to kill the Pope, but the ideas that he's already put into power and into place are going to be, I think, harder to displace.
Right. It's what Lenny spent the whole first season trying to do, is to establish that the Pope is more of a symbol of, you know, he's an influencer, for lack of a better term. You know, he's a person who
influencer.
He's a person who understood that the visage or what the Pope represented was more than the Pope himself.
Yeah.
And he clearly established all these hoodie prayer fanatics. I wrote down what they're called.
Hoodie prayer fanatics.
The friars.
That just, it's a powder keg is what he's built. And, you know, it after 3 heart transplants, and everyone, even the people inside the Vatican, assume he's dead, he's still got this power that's going to leave a huge vacuum that Pope Francis II couldn't hope to fill, even granting all of my socialist dreams of, you know, people in power giving away all their money and doing the thing that they should do.
And kind of following on to what Pius XIII was doing, right? He was taking the church back to the fundamentals. Mm-hmm. And for Pius XIII, that meant a different thing than Francis II.
It's a lot more gilded and a lot less luxurious poverty.
Right. And Francis II is going back to Jesus's sort of
teachings. So that's the other threat I wanted to mention facing the church. And this is like extends out the fantasy into the real world. When I was watching this, I'm like, isn't this exactly what the church should do? Like, you've got this refugee crisis across Europe. The Catholic Church owns a shit ton of real estate, a shit ton of buildings. They have a lot of money. Like, isn't this literally what, unironically, the Catholic Church should do?
The Catholic Church should live like me in my 20s, paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah. If you need money. Like, look what happened when fucking Notre Dame burnt down. Like, suddenly there's $7 million to renovate the thing. I don't know what's going on with that now. But, like, if God needs, like, it's the joke of, like, throwing money into the heaven, like, what God wants he can keep. That should be literally true for the Catholic Church. And I kept on thinking, like, I haven't read a lot of press on this yet because I was a little pressed for time this week, or like big opinion pieces about like if this has got any kind of ripples or shockwaves. Because I know there's a lot of like stuff going on in the Catholic Church between like traditional Catholics and like kind of reform minded Catholics. This series seems like it's getting at the heart of it. It's like, why doesn't the church do more than it does? Like, the church can barely grapple effectively with the problem of its pedophile priests.
Well, you can see in this episode that they are actively repressing people, like gay cardinals,
straight cardinals,
they're calling the migrants and refugees at their gates terrorists, which they do within the same episode. So you can see that, you know, there's all these nuns who are being asked to be very pious for lack of a better term, but they're all, you know, having this like writhing dance and in the opening credits, and I don't know if that actually happened.
That's the thing.
But there's the nun who's very carefully not looking at or touching or even cleaning Lenny's penis.
Pontifex Maximus.
Pontifex Maximus, but she's masturbating right next to him. So you've got this, what people are led to believe, which is the right way of living, but also what you convince yourself in order so that you can keep your golden crosses and sleep at night.
Yeah, like these are supposed to be the most adherent to the laws of God, right? These people. And yet we see them constantly breaking those laws while presenting this image of, you know, piety. I don't know if that intro really happens either. Do you think that's going to be the intro for the full season?
Well, so I think I remember in first season that the intro of the show happened at the... Didn't it happen at the end just like this? I'm wondering if the credits outro sequence is going to be the new intro sequence.
That lands on John Branagh.
Yeah, it like just comes and it just lands on, you know, the new pope, the new who's got guy liner and all that. I wonder if it's going to be kind of like that, and maybe he'll add a wink to it or something. I don't know, but I don't know. Branagh might be a completely different type of pope.
He's more reserved than the
but Epicurean, maybe, because like that's one of the like some of the stuff that came out preseason is like that he's got like a weakness or maybe a taste of the finer things, you know?
Okay, which would suit the way the church is currently run in this show.
Yeah, but it's going to be a hairpin turn for the faithful, who I think seemed like the what Francis said was really exciting to them, and that was on the back of Lenny, who also was a very non-traditional or maybe ultra-traditional pope.
When they assassinate this pope, I'm just thinking, what is the public perception here?
Exactly.
There has been a span of what, a week maybe, where this pope has been turning over tables in the Catholic Church,
right,
and doing all the right things, opening all the right doors, and then suddenly he's dead.
I think it's very easy to spin.
And you see how like fanatical these people are, and they had the last season on where Lenny's talking about, I want fanatics, because they are all about love, and this like woman who's just like screaming, pray! Like, I don't believe in the power of prayer necessarily, but I do believe in the power of that woman and of the people in St. Peter's Basilica, like rising up and saying enough is enough, plus a bunch of angry, pissed off immigrants. And they're also setting some interesting things about like they show like one of these guys sneaking into the nunnery to have some sort of form of congress or relationship with one of these nuns. That's going to be interesting how they handle that. But like this show is fearless as far as handling, like last year they focused a male on male rape that I don't think I've ever, I think that might be the first time in fiction I've actually seen something like that portrayed, and like the emotional payload of it. I think that it's Viola did something to took the easy way out, and on the back of Lenny kind of suffering some kind of similar mysterious malady and kind of hustle, like, you know, trying to, you know, get a new pope in before the old pope's even cooled off. I think that's going to be a big problem with there's going to be like a war of the faithful, it seems like. Civil Catholic war.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's bachelorette bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Or Lenny gets up in the next episode, because this one ends with his finger moving.
Yeah. Mm.
So he gets up just as they're swearing in John Brannick's, or the two of them face off to... I mean, once you elect a new pope and the other one wakes up out of a coma, what are the rules here?
Well, I actually researched this.
Accidentally researched it?
Yeah, because I was just looking at, like, because I was, I don't know, I went down a rabbit hole of, like, looking at the throne of St. Peter and, like, the big reliquary they've got to hold that and, like, what it actually looks like.
It feels like the most new pope thing ever, where, like, you walked around a corner in the Vatican and God revealed to you the truth this particular mystery.
There's a concept of an anti-pope.
Fuck?
Which is a false...
That's Marilyn Manson's character.
Which is a false pope. And it is. He was the last one. So apparently in church history, a couple of bishops or cardinals will get jumped up ideas, or something like a pope will be instituted by one wing of the church and not another, and then you've got kind of like
just have Protestants, right?
you got the real pope, and then there's like these false popes, the anti-popes, and I wonder like if that's what's going to happen. They're going to get this new Brannick put into place, and he's going to be the pope, and then Lenny's going to rise from the apparent dead, declare him an anti-pope, and then
I have so many questions. Okay, when you say anti-pope and you say there's one pope for one faction, one pope for another faction, you can't really be talking like in official channels, like official power structure, right? You're talking about loyalties, not titles.
What do you mean?
Like some people view this person, like we see in this episode, right? Hernandez is viewed as the pope by some, by a majority, it seems.
Yeah.
And then Voiello is viewed by the pope as his acolytes. Is that what you're talking about, or are you talking about there is an official power structure where there is a pope and anti-pope?
There are different times in history. Like there's some times where, like, imagine like if the church is truly divided,
if they go 34 rounds and they're 50-50 every single round, then it's you got to split, right?
Yeah, but like imagine like again, think of this church as a 2,000-year-old institution that's seen a lot of shit, and then imagine like a case where like a Viola and his like inner circle arranges for the rest of the college to be outside of Rome, and then they kill a pope, and then they elect one with just a very small, and then the rest of the college comes back and says, "No, fuck this, we're gonna do it. We're gonna elect a different pope." You know, it's like one. It can be a situation like that. Mm. And I guess there's some points, like there's the article that I stopped reading was a breaking down like Pope Leo the VIII versus Benedict the V, which is like, I guess, had control of 50% of the church each, and so it's like it depends.
If I'm a Catholic,
yeah,
and I go to church the day of the appointing of the new pope, would I find out that there are actually two popes at some point? Is that what you're talking about?
The faithful would see that there's one true pope and then there's the anti-pope, but who is the anti-pope and who's the pope depends on which part of the church you're affiliated with. But you're quickly mining the depths of my knowledge of the subject.
Okay, yeah, you accidentally.
I just say that there's a concept
called
the anti-pope that I found very exciting in, because you got a still living pope, which you can hit like Benedict. The last Benedict stepped down, which is kind of controversial. Like it's a position for life. He stepped down because he got tired of all the Palpatine jokes. And we got the Francis the First now sitting on the throne. But if, like, you know, Pope John Paul II died and then they put Benedict on, and then Pope John Paul II came back from the dead and denounced him, that's a situation that's exciting. Then they might be going towards that this season.
I mean, I know which pope I'd pick in that situation.
Well, yeah, I'm Pope Lenny for life. So.
Oh, no, no. I mean, in the John Paul coming back from the dead.
Oh, yeah.
I'm probably going to pick him.
Sure, yeah. Uh-huh. But unless it's witchcraft. That's the thing. I was getting, you don't
he's
like
a fucking anti-pope.
That's anti. If you don't like the, if you don't like a miracle, just say it's demonic. And
yeah.
Then you got yeah.
Demonic birth in season one.
That's how you get to anti-pope. But no, I think that would be an interesting concept to play with.
Yeah, and I mean, this season is going to have a lot of those, you know, power battles, like much like season one did, and it was interesting because in season one, Lenny very much has the reins the entire season. Mm-hmm. Like he's appointed as Pope, and he just steamrolls Voiello the whole season. Voiello basically has no recourse. He tries a couple things. He tries to seduce the Pope at one point.
But Lenny, the thing is, Lenny was bulletproof because he was scandal free.
He was, yeah.
Eccentric as hell, but never violated, as far as I could tell, the law of the church.
But we don't know if that's true of John Malkovich. I mean, certainly as a person, I know that's not true of John Malkovich.
Yeah.
But this new Pope, mm-hmm. what is he going to be like? Is he going to have any weaknesses to exploit? Is he going to, and you said he might have some sort of proclivities towards something. We don't know what that is, but
yeah. And I'm curious to see where they go with that. What do you think? There's a significant new character that was introduced, this ambassador to the Holy See,
Bauer,
named after Jack Bauer, I guess, because he gets his hands dirty.
Talking about the guy that Voiello met on the boat at the beginning of the episode.
Damn. I've never seen a limo boat, but holy shit, that's a limo boat.
It sure is.
He clearly orchestrated the death of our new Pope, but it had nothing to do with Voiello. Because Voiello, at one point, Cavallo, his new guy who specializes in making people uneasy, comes to him
horse.
And...
Can we call him the horse? That's what Cavallo means in Italian.
Does it really? Okay.
All right. Well, the horse comes in and he says, Bauer's not responding, or he hasn't appeared. Mm-hmm. But Bauer is still making moves to clearly kill this new Pope.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering who he's working for. Is it Brannix?
I thought he was working for... You might have to explain this to me again, because I thought he was working for Voiello.
I think it's unclear.
He met Voiello on the boat earlier, in the early part of the episode. And then later, Voiello asks about Bauer, and Cavallo says that he hasn't responded or hasn't appeared, as if he's not speaking to him anymore.
Yeah, I think that might be cover.
You think he's like gone underground because it's a dangerous time?
I think he's working
time.
For someone else within, because he gets a text message with a thumbs up from inside of the Vatican. Uh-huh. Bauer does.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So it seems like he's got a plan working with someone else that's not Voiello.
Huh.
Because I think Voiello.
I haven't considered it.
Yeah.
It's possible. I assume it's Voiello, because it's him and Hernandez. The way they framed their shot in, I don't know where that, what is that chamber with the cage that the Cardinals met in? It's not
the Sistine Chapel.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So it's not the Basilica of St. Peter, or is that the same facility?
I think the Sistine Chapel might be within.
Because I was trying to find on Wikipedia the actual room and like what it's called, and I couldn't. And I think that we had a couple Catholics last year that were kind of like helping us out with some of these, the minutiae of the lore, the deep lore of Catholicism.
So I didn't know either. The one time I went to Rome, I didn't actually go to the Vatican, which now I'm regretting deeply.
Yeah.
But
I would go. Jesus Christ. Yeah. The art alone. Yeah.
But I looked it up, and I'd searched Google for Sistine Chapel, and that room came back.
Okay, well then there you
like
go.
Like 500 times. Okay. So I assume, that's Sistine Chapel.
But whether it's part of St. Peter's Basilica, which is the giant church itself, it's not clear to me.
I think it is. Yeah,
okay.
It's part of
all
it.
Right. What were we talking about?
We're talking about Bauer.
Oh, right.
And I think Bauer is turned on Voiello.
Oh, yes. The way they shot Voiello and Hernandez, like in that darkened room, kind of shaking hands, felt like this was the big powers behind the power agreeing on what must be done. But I don't. It could be a misdirection.
It seemed like they were voting on, or they were agreeing that with the two of them having the majority votes outside of Brannix, someone who we've never even seen but still has a very good percentage of votes, that they're agreeing to put their power behind Brannix so that he's the next pope. So that these two people who think that they can, you know, control the reins, are going to put up this new pope that, just like Lenny, just like Villetti, that they are going to try to control behind the scenes, but it's not going to work out.
I'm so happy that he took the name Francis.
Yeah.
Although he's dead now. Like, that's the thing.
Yeah.
I was so happy. I was like, Francis, that's a name I can pronounce.
Yeah.
Oh, thank God.
Okay.
But one episode, one Pope down. Are we going to see a new Pope every episode? Is that the thing?
I don't think so, but the show's ceiling is such that I would go, yeah, if they have a new Pope every fucking episode, it would be pretty, it'd be kind of cool.
Yeah. How do you pronounce his name? Villetti?
That GLI, that the GL sound is impossible for Americans to pronounce. Let's not try it.
That's where I keep getting hung up.
Yeah.
This Pope, I love it. I love how immediately the feeling of power hits you once you get to that balcony where you make your speeches.
Yeah.
And like, it's a thing that I only give the latitude to the new Pope to do something like that. Because in another show, I would call bullshit. I would be like, this guy never showed, this is not within his character. He never showed any hints of wanting power at all. And then suddenly he's got it and he loves it.
Well, right? I think this is like the way he effortlessly and skillfully wielded the power. Like, I get that, like, if like power, like, and the way they portrayed it, like, everyone's like, my God, he's starting to believe, but like,
it's so over the top.
Not, but he's like, starting to believe in a way that's dangerous to the people in power and not to us.
Yeah, but I like that, and but you're right. There's a lot of these wild kind of plot twists that in other shows I would dismiss as preposterous and crazy. But in the new Pope, because you've got God and you've got like this peculiar mythology they've set up, it does. But they also, I felt like, they a little retconned it as like, you know, because when he was giving that speech to Viello in his private office, he intimated that I lost my nativity years ago, but I retreated in this persona as a fool, as like a way to just protect myself. Like, you know, like if I knew everyone's deepest, darkest secrets and I felt like I had some machinations to me, you'd probably have me rubbed out.
Yeah.
Well, now you done fucked up and you can't come at me like you did with Lenny because I know where all your bodies are buried.
Mm-hmm. And I give this show latitude largely because of its style. Like I look at the show and I say, well, it's trying to convey a feeling and B, information in unconventional ways. I don't think that this is a plot-based show with all of its political machinations and stuff like that. This is a show that will describe to you in visuals how someone who had no aspirations to power would suddenly get power and be changed by that. And that can happen in the span of half a second in this show. And it's, you just need to know what's happening, not exactly how it all happened and connected. Yeah. And that to me is sort of refreshing when I'm watching television because I'm always looking for the next plot development.
Yeah.
Here I'm sitting back and letting the plot developments be what they are underneath this layer of just general understanding of what the show's going for.
Yeah. Yeah. I said on Twitter that like I'm going to pretend like this is how the true ending of Game of Thrones because I do feel like there is some kind of spiritual connection there, like the intense politics and gamesmanship. You've got like these authentic costumes that are like in some cases over 1,000 years old and like these rich traditions and these things, like these institutions I don't really understand. But they're I feel like there is a lot of Game of Thrones DNA in this, just in the, you know, the salacious machinations of power that really hit me in a way that I've missed since the glory days of, you know, Littlefinger and Varys going at each other, hammer and tongue. Like, you've got that in Viello versus whoever he's fighting at the time. I do wonder what they're going to do with the Sparrows. Like, I don't know. Maybe you just take to tell the Swiss Guard to, like, okay, get rid of your halberds, get your machine guns out, and, like, clear them out.
Yeah, I mean, you certainly could.
You could, but then what does that do? Because, I don't know. What could the Catholic Church do to hurt its relationship with the laity that, you know? That's the other story is, like, you know, the laity's been through a lot these last couple decades. You know, threats inside and out. It's fascinating. Fascinating.
Mm-hmm. I have a couple of one-off things.
Okay.
Viello sold the Venus of Willendorf at Christie's, which was that prominent fertility figure from the first season. And Cardinal Asante?
Well, it was sent to England to be sold.
Well, yeah, which yeah. I think he's got it hidden away somewhere.
That's what
hopefully.
I was thinking, too.
Yeah, in his uh-huh. house. We'll see it an episode from now.
Yeah, Cardinal Asante, I think, the tall man who's always smoking, and I think he might be gay.
Yeah, uh-huh. they hint at that this episode.
Yeah, he has the best reaction shots in the whole series. Mm-hmm. Like, when Voyello says that he sold the Venus of Willendorf at Christie's, just his Asante's, like, slack-jawed look at mm-hmm. the person next to him. Like, if that's one, but he has the best reaction shots through just everything that's happening.
He has a lot of good ones. The one that stuck out to me was actually not his. It was the, it might have been the guy sitting next to him, the very, very old cardinal who, he's the one who I think doesn't know who Brannix is or doesn't know who Vigletti is. When
the guy who's got the Band-Aid on his head?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm not explaining. You're not going to know who this guy is unless you've noticed this moment, but something happens and he just rolls his fucking eyes mm-hmm. into the back of God's head. Like, it's unbelievable how far he rolls his eyes. And I just love that reaction.
They transubstantiate in his body, turning to Christ's yeah. own eyes rolling into the back of his head.
Yeah. The other thing I had is Voyello doing. Voyello and Hernandez outside of the bathroom having their private chat at the very end of the episode. No. And Hernandez doing his very deep voice against Voyello. Mm-hmm. Like, it's got to be a little bit of a caricature, right? Like, he knows that throwing his voice a little bit isn't really going to tell us, the audience, that it's not yeah. the exact same guy playing a different character, but he does it just so that I think it's believable, but also kind of funny.
No,
at the same
yeah.
time.
The
thing
is it's ridiculous. Actually him doing a bit of performance is funnier than if he just, you know, just let the mole do all the work. Like, I think, and then there's also a little bit different of an energy to uh-huh. the Hernandez.
Yeah.
Like,
slightly.
Yeah, yeah. Like he's more of a, like an offensive, I'll take the piss out of you right to your yes. face. Whereas Voyello yeah. is
takes
all about
ultra seriously.
Abasing mm-hmm. and, you know, self-abnegation and then putting the knife in when you turn your back after you trust him.
So,
it's like I respect him for doing a bit, and that actually helped, you know, made everything that much better. And which is, again, why this show gets away with a lot, just because it executes yeah. everything. On, you know, there's almost never any awkward dialogue that's not like intentionally awkward. Like, it's just everything seems very well thought out.
I think most of the dialogue is awkward because I can't like that cardinal in the bamboo forest. I hardly ever understand what Voyello says.
Yeah.
Not because I don't understand the concepts,
right?
But
just because his stilted kind of delivery,
a way of speaking that uh-huh. yeah, I it's tough. I almost have to watch this sometimes with subtitles or
up. Yeah. But when I mean dialogue, I mean like the script.
I know.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Because you're right. There is a lot of three different languages being spoken, and mm-hmm. you can tell that some of them are more fluent in some than others. But
yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder where Brannix is from. Do they say where he?
England.
He's Sir John Brannix, so he's English.
Yes.
Yeah.
Knighted, at least.
Hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah,
the temporal and spiritual in one. Oh my gosh, good makings of an anti-pope, if you ask me.
We didn't talk about Cavallo very much, who is Voyello's man who specializes in making people uneasy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who meets Sophia Dubois, the woman who has never felt uneasy.
Mm-hmm. An exceptional woman.
Yeah, and she's got a very severe haircut this season. She's entered the realm of like Robin Wright.
She's gone Claire Underwood
in
this season.
House of
yeah.
Cards.
Yeah.
You know,
that's the same person.
Yeah, yeah. She's the
Jesus. Okay,
it's the same person.
Me. Yeah. No, I remember her role from season one. I just didn't recognize her.
Yeah, I wonder what kind of role the Pope's marketing team would have in like the whole poverty kind of thing.
Yeah. So, in an era where we're giving everything away, can't be like putting your face on plates.
Yeah.
What job does she have?
Yeah, how do you spin that? How do you, because like you got a Pope who's idolized at this point and sidelined at the same time. How do you spin the death of the new Pope and the still living young Pope?
It is interesting that now that, Pope Pius is dead or like on death's door, because, you know, he strictly controlled access to his image and like what would be. And you see
made one appearance, I think.
Yeah. Like the fact that like he would commission like plates church. Or t-shirt, but like everyone's got sweatshirts and t-shirts and posters of him now.
Yeah.
It's almost like I understood that that's Fiello kind of like, yeah, let's
I mean, yeah, at the beginning of this,
open
Boiello,
up the floodgates. Let's make some goddamn money now.
He's the de facto Pope.
Yeah,
like he doesn't want a conclave because his power is going to dissipate as soon as that happens.
But he's not good. That the thing is, Vielo is very good being the power behind the throne, but he sucks at just being. It's kind of like an Avicerella situation from Expanse. Like if he was doing a very good job, he wouldn't have the ambassador. He would have Jack Bauer's uncle like saying, "You need a fucking conclave, buddy, because this ain't it." Mm-hmm. You know, it's great. What else do we want to talk about? I feel like that's about it.
I'm good. Yeah,
the only thing we didn't talk about was Esther.
Esther's still there, still giving it to the church.
Got a lot of faith in the young Pope.
She's essentially calling the Catholic Orthodox establishment apostate, which I think, if I'm reading the tea leaves right, is going to have a lot of sympathy within the laity this season going forward.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We kind of ambush people with this. Like, I know it's something we've been excited about, but I don't feel like we probably set, like, properly greased the feed and all that stuff. Do we have a new email?
Yeah, newpope@baldmove.com.
Okay, newpope@baldmove.com. And if you would like to send in feedback for that, we will be considering it on a week-to-week basis, because I think things might change, because I know our schedule tightens up a little bit towards the end of this run. But we are thinking of doing episode-by-episode coverage of it, because we do love the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a lot of fun to watch.
There's a new feed video on this podcast, kind of a new thing. Yeah. So, like, if you're listening to the podcast, hit subscribe, I guess. If you're on the video, hit subscribe, because we're going to be covering this season episode-by-episode.
Mm-hmm.
Every week we'll be back with a new show.
And until next week, until we rise again from our fourth successful heart transplant, I'm Aaron.
I'm Jim.
I'm Cecily.
See ya.